the stats, the salt, the sanity. And every so often, they talk about sports, too. Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk.
Done after one and keep on pouring. Ain't too high, ain't too low. Just holding down the middle, steady as I go. I ain't all holy water, I ain't all Jim Beam. I'm somewhere in between.
Another episode of Armchair Sports Talk, doing things a little differently today. Going to play a little game with these two. We're going to do the first ever armchair debate. Got random topics. These guys have never seen them before. We're going to do a little debating, going to have a little fun, and we're going to see how quickly these guys can think on their toes. So bring them in real quick. Our first debater, he is a graduate of the prestigious Ford University, Mr. Russ Ivanek.
Thank you for the compliment. I'd like to think that when it comes to the realm of debating, I'm a master.
I'm sure you are. You absolutely are. And our other debater, who I think is going to be a hard one today, he is the leader of the Farmington chapter for the Hair Club of Men, Mr. Justin Marcus.
Now he may be a skilled master at debating, but it's more about frequency, man. Can you multiple times master debate against somebody else? So I'm ready for the quantity. I'm ready for the challenge. I didn't go to Ford, but damn it, I got the street smarts.
I was really hoping you were gonna go, you made me a master debater, but I'm a cunning linguist.
Can we start from the top? I also want you to get Price's Right style. Like, Russ, come on down. Like, I want Bob Barker, this man. Let's go.
Hi, Mom.
Oh, that's great. All right, well, let's get right into it. We got a lot to go today. So we're gonna do a coin flip. We're gonna do a coin flip and see who gets to go first here. Oh, this is very suspenseful. I know how scared both these. Oh, by an inch, it lands on Sergeant Salty. Sergeant Salty, are you prepared for your first topic?
Yeah, I mean, just like I took the ACT four times, a lot of Red Bull and a lot of non-studying, and hope just elevate my score a little bit here today. So let's go.
All right, here we go. First topic that is going to go to Justin, and I'm so excited for this. Oh, this is a good one. Here we go. Justin, you have to take the pro in this, so you are for this. The Big Ten says that if you have to miss a game for obvious COVID reasons, it is automatically going to be scheduled as a loss. Your thoughts on the Big Ten automatically making these losses no chance for makeup?
Well, I like to first tell my opponent, you're going to lose. That's off the jump.
Agreed.
Here. Number one, because I know my opponent agrees with me just a little bit here. It's about damn time. We don't have time, and it's all about time. If you can't make snaps, you're taking L's. And that's as simple as it's going to be. We are going to get vaccinated. We're going to have teams ready to play. And I completely support the Big Ten doing this because it's a 16-week schedule. We have to, or a 12-week schedule. Apologize. I don't want any false information against my argument here. 12 games. We got to get it in. Bowl season has to follow it. Get vaccinated, show up on the field, and don't worry about it. So I like this ultimatum in a way for the Big Ten.
Oh. Well, I'm going to do the best impersonation of every Green Party candidate that's ever run. I'm here. I'm going to give it my best effort, and we all know I have no chance. So here we go. Yes, I completely get the ultimatum that they're throwing out there, and with the full intention of they want these teams to take this serious. However, we're 18-plus months into this pandemic right now, and I say to you, if you do not plan for failure, you are planning to fail itself. So yes, you can come out here and say that, but let's keep in mind, this isn't breaking curfew. This is something that it's very possible you can be vaccinated, you can take all the correct steps, and because it is in fact a global pandemic, something slips through. So we know this ahead of time. We have the benefit of foresight. why not build in buffers to the schedule? An extra couple weeks where you stretch out the schedule. Say you get 14 weeks to play 12 games or whatever it is, or 14 weeks to play 11 games, so that you can have a flex spot. If we can flex a Sunday night game from a Sunday afternoon game because, hey, actually Aaron Rodgers is playing, we're interested in that. You're telling me you can't move a college football game in division a week? It feels like we could move around this. That being said, you forfeit.
Now, my only thing to contribute to this is I want to ask this question of both of you, and then we'll get on to the next topic. How long before this no bend rule that we are going to apply to everyone gets bent because Ohio State tests positive for COVID, and at this particular moment, Ohio State is the only chance the Big Ten has at the college football playoff, assuming something miraculous doesn't happen. So how long before they go, we understand that was the rule, Jay, but we're going to give them a pass on this because it's a special exemption. Here's our BS reason why.
Now, am I arguing this in the my pro?
I'm asking you to answer that
still,
question.
Or is this just
I'm
a generic ass question?
Well, you're for it, so I want you to I want you to answer that question.
Look, at the Big Ten level, they do what's best in the moment. So, what might be the right answer for today might not be the right answer in the future. I'm very, very politician on this right now. We are going to simply do our best in the moment. So, if we know if we have more evidence to support our decision change, we're going to do that in the future. We're going to be ready for it. And every team in the Big Ten has an equal chance to win at all times. Don't discredit Iowa. Everyone has an equal shot at doing this thing. If Ohio State just so happens to be favored and we make a rule change by then, it's not it's by happenstance.
How long is anybody else liking the thumb from Jay? Just that we are not making bad decisions.
I am not a crook.
Is that my Bernie Madoff impression there? Or?
I was going for Nixon, but all right.
I felt a little Clinton-ish, but that's just for me. I did not believe this rule should be broken. I didn't. Yeah. Russ, but for you, how long until they bend this rule?
This is actually a perfect argument, and I should have just made this argument as my main point, that you're not what we saw it last year, right? We saw it last year with Ohio State getting in. If you don't build a cushion in to plan for the inevitable failure, you're going to break your own rules. You're going to break your own quote unquote moral standing with this. It's inflexible by design. And what do we know about inflexible things? When they're put under pressure, they shatter. Mm-hmm. So should it happen? It shouldn't happen. Once you set the rules, you shouldn't change the rules, because that's called thinking ahead and planning. But when will it happen? Week 8 or so, when Ohio State gets their second positive test.
Yeah, that's fair. All right. Well, that's the first topic. It's a good one. It's very interesting to see. I honestly believe it will be at some point this year, whether it's Ohio State or whatever team emerges from the Big Ten as a real strong contender. I honestly think you'll see them try to find a way to sneak in. To clarify, we didn't want to mean it's always a loss. We might try to make some amendments to this to fit people around it. Like, okay, but if a team's 0-9, you're not letting them have an amendment here. You're going to give them a loss. So we'll see what happens with it. All right, so now it's Russ's turn. Russ, your topic. I know, it's scary. It is scary. Oh, nope, that's the exact same topic. Because this
thing.
No, here we go.
I'm prepared for it now.
This is what I was curious about. Now, you get to pick whichever side you want. You got to stick to the argument, but you get to pick the side. In an interview, I don't remember the name of the podcast. I do apologize. But in an interview with Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes, Carmelo Anthony was asked about had he been picked in Detroit. Now, according to Carmelo, up until draft day and during draft day, he was told by the Detroit Pistons, we are going to select you. You are the pick. Now, obviously, over the years, you know, that class is looking like a Hall of Fame class with four guys most likely in the Hall of Fame in the first five picks. We didn't get the one of the Hall of Famers. But your opinion on if Carmelo, because we've talked about this on the show, your opinion on if Carmelo had come here and your thoughts on his statement that if he had come to Detroit, they would have gone back to back.
So I'll peek behind the curtain. My process for these things, it's 80% preparation and 20% perspiration. And that last 20% is afraid that you're going to ask me something that wasn't covered in the first 80%. That being said, I was ready for this question. Yes, they would have gone back to back. They easily would have gone back to back. What are we, beyond that? That's where we can start to have the conversation. Because look, they won with the literal human victory cigar in Darko Milicic, right? Contributing almost nothing. Even if Carmelo, look, you can say all the diva stuff you want to about him. It wasn't going to happen in 1 year. He wasn't going to boil over in 2 years, maybe 3-4 years. Maybe that pushes Rashid to leave earlier. You know, maybe Tayshaun never becomes Tayshaun because he doesn't get the opportunities. We can talk about the further reaching impacts of this, but we're looking at a team that won the championship the very next year. And now you're going to add a Hall of Fame caliber player, his second year in the season, for that next year, and take away essentially nothing. Give it to me.
Okay. Jay.
Wow. I very not prepared for this one. Where's Russ as? I got to consider the source who's saying it, because I did see the comments that Melo made. And, you know, when he first comments on Detroit winning after not going there, he goes, damn, like he could have got one right off the bat. So I kind of want to put him away. I don't think he has any credibility towards the answer here. I think he was just trying to win a championship and he thought it would be automatic. And what was automatic was the chemistry of that team at that time. I don't know bringing Melo into that fold. I get the Darko part. I'm not going to, for the sake of the show, I'm not going to just pretend like that's not the actual fact here, because it is. So yet again, Russ is up now 2-0 in this debate. hey, I pretended I was the Big Ten there for a minute. I realized I still had to be myself and not an actual representative from the Big Ten. So I'm learning while we do this. I don't know. I think the chemistry was the way it was. Winning another title, I don't know. I'm learning a lot about basketball, and maybe the diva stuff does spill onto the court and it becomes a problem. And I think if anyone's going to carry that problem bag, it's Melo. I mean, yeah. Did he even actually win a championship anywhere?
Nope. No title.
So I think he's Mr. Poopy Pants, but he could have had one right out the gate, and now he's just feeling some FOMO on a championship. So I don't think it happens with him.
I think a big thing is, one, it brings in that big question of, do the Pistons ever go after Rasheed Wallace? Do they move Tayshaun or Carmelo to the power forward spot, play smaller basketball, and never go after Rasheed? And a lot of people see Rasheed as that final piece that got them to that next level. So you take away Rasheed, the question is, do they win a title? Carmelo, in the interview, had said that he was told him and Tayshaun would be splitting time. It would not have been, you know, you're coming in starting day one. They were high on Tayshaun, and for good reason. So you'd be splitting time. But then this is the thing where, if you listened closely, you saw Carmelo's ego couldn't stay down long enough, because he even said, oh, that's fine, I'd be happy to do that. My first thought was, I don't know how long you're going to have me splitting time with this kid. So it's like, okay, so you already knew you weren't going to be a team player for this. So I can see the we're going to be a back-to-back team, and I think they would have had more than enough talent, but I kind of agree that the ego would have been so hard to get over that I don't know that Carmelo ever buys into the, this is a team effort, not a Carmelo and the four Carmelo tiers.
That's the right point to bring up, frankly. I mean, because that whole going to work era was very much the embodiment of the team over me. Absolutely. Right? There's no me in team, except that's not how spelling works. could Melo have disrupted that? Yeah, absolutely he could have. But you know what makes a lot of diva shit go away real fast? Winning. Winning in a strong veteran culture, which that team had.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, we're back over to Russ now for a little bit of fun. And, ooh! This is a topic that you're going to be pro on this one. That's the one thing you need to know. This was a topic that I was very much hoping to fall to Justin, but Justin's going to have to go in the con on this, and I don't think he's going to be able to go con on this. Russ, your pro topic. Luka Garza is a top eight player for the Pistons day one.
Day one of this season?
Day one of this season. Luka Garza is a top eight rotation for this Pistons basketball team.
And I have to take the pro.
Yep.
Ugh. God, I wish I fell the other side. Okay. here we go. Who are the two main pillars of the Detroit Pistons right now? Killian Hayes and Cade Cunningham. As far as ball handling goes, you're going to fit the offense around them. I argue that, hey, Bay this year might be better than Cade Cunningham. Not long-term, but whatever. So if we're building an offense around those two, what do you need? You need spacing. You need shooting. And this team sucks on the boards right now. Garza, for all the weight that he's lost, is looking to get more mobile. Yes, he looks like he is 2 feet in concrete trying to swim in the water. True. But he could get better. And if he does, you have a strong presence there that can space with Isaiah Stewart, knock down the three, which we saw back-to-back player of the game in the summer league. Luka Garza shooting the lights out from everywhere. He fits that need. He fits as a four or five that can just shoot and get the hell out of the way for everything else. And complements the game of those two almost perfectly. So top eight, all he's got to be then is the seventh or eighth rotation guy playing 15, 20 minutes a night, coming in, hitting shots, getting off, looking good. Garzilla, here we go.
I love it. This is Garzilla. All right. So just to put a little context, to put a little context to this. If you've listened to the show at all, you know Luka Garza might be Justin's favorite Piston at this particular moment. He's a very large fan. So for Justin to have to argue that Luka Garza isn't a day one rotational player on this team, I'm very curious to see how this goes.
Well, even more than that, Garza helped Justin fall in love with college basketball before he was even a Piston.
It's very true.
I have different feelings on this. Listen, the body of work that we know that is Luka Garza was at a college level with a little bit more body mass. Not only is he transitioning from college to pros, but he also has transitioned his body, which has transitioned his game. Way too many variables to be consistent on a top rotating eight coming onto this team. I think the two-way contract is reflective of that. And he's going to move around just like he has been moving around since he got drafted to lose all that weight. We are in flux. And knowing that I actually love Luka Garza and he is going to make the top eight, he's not going to make the top eight because there's too many variables there for him. And he's got to fit into the team. We knew what we got with Hayes, what we got with Bay. We saw what we got with Kennard and all the other pieces that didn't fit. They immediately didn't fit. So the immediacy and variables is a problem for Luka Garza being a consistent piece on this team. He's going to move around, and he's got to figure out who he is NBA, because we know who he was college, and they're different players apparently. God, that hurt.
Yeah.
Don't apparently do that ever again.
I knew the two-way contract was the great loaded bullet for the con.
Yep.
It gives you a lot to work off of. That being said, I have to say, I'm giving this round to Russ. Russ really did kind of sell the fact that if he was going to be a top eight player, here's how he's got to do it. I mean, Jay, you did a great job knowing full well that if I had given you the pro, you would have ran with it so easily. But I have to give it to Russ on that one. That he really, if you're going to be a top eight, he just sold on it. So, Luca, if you're listening, that's how you become a top eight rotational player here in Detroit. Over to Jay now. This is going very well. I'm very curious. Ooh, okay. Jay, you get to pick your topic. You get to pick. Give me your 60 seconds of salt, my friend. Air your grievance. Air your grievance.
Air my grievance. Okay. My topic. Oh, man. What am I going to do here? Okay. I got a good one. My topic that I'm going to be pro for, which in turn Russ has to be against, right? That's how this is going to work.
That's correct.
Russ went to four. No, my topic is going to be Moritz Seider should be a everyday defenseman on the wing. We're going to go with here.
That's your pro?
Okay. Sider deserves every bit of being on this team. He has to be here every day of the week. I'm done watching clips on Twitter. I'm done seeing all the GIFs and watching him wreck people and meet Lucas Raymond or whoever he knocked over in the European leagues or whatever. He needs to be a player on this team right now, consistently, every single night, so that we can usher in the Lidstrom that's coming up behind him as well and the other defensemen that we have. We can move out some of the old pieces like we just did with Nielsen and potentially Filppula. We got to do that on defensive as well, getting rid of DeKaiser, moving away from those pieces that we know are not here to help the team in the long run. Bring Sider in now, sell jerseys, get people to come to LCA because they're already coming for Cade. Make them come for Sider as well. Those are your two pillars of selling tickets and selling merch. So from a financial standpoint, they're going to make money. And from a fan standpoint, we get to finally see what we drafted. And he nervously stood up and went, oh my God, they actually took me. I shouldn't have been picked yet. We need that payoff. And you can't argue against that.
All right. Well, Justin said get rid of DeKaiser, so he automatically wins. But Russ, go ahead.
All right. Before I jump into this, I want to see Sider every day. Please give it to me. Hook it to my veins. Now I'll put on the villain mask. Steve Yzerman is the GM of the Detroit Red Wings. Steve Yzerman has been quoted multiple times saying that he will not just leave a roster spot open for a young guy and they will have to come and take someone's job. And I'm sorry for making this sound like a political ad. Steve Yzerman says. But let's look at what he's done. On the roster, ahead of Sider, getting an NHL contract guaranteed already. Nick Leddy, Danny DeKaiser, Mark Stahl, Troy Stetcher, Jordan Oosterle, and Filip Hronek. There's your six. Gustav Lindstrom is in there right now, and they protected him in the expansion draft. That's seven. We've seen that they'll carry 8D. You can only really play at most seven of them. We've seen. They go 11 and 7 every now and then. So you're going to tell me that, 19, 20-year-old Moritz Seider is going to come in for a team that still hasn't given Joe Valeno a regular roster spot, who was drafted 2 years prior to Seider, that they're going to let him walk in with 1 year of pro hockey experience and become an everyday player? That is not the Yzerman MO. That is not the way he has done things. And it is going to break our hearts when it doesn't happen.
Justin, did that just make you upset again?
Yeah, did he just turn off his lights?
Justin's like, lights out argument. It's over. I can't compete.
I know that was kind of dark, but that's a little bit literal, don't you think?
Yeah, a little bit. Look, DeKaiser, not DeKaiser. Look, he's got me already lined up. I agree. I don't think it's a everyday position for Sider. I would love to see it. I think we're all in that area now where we would love to see it. But I think at this particular point, he's not ready for that spot yet. He's really just not ready for that spot yet. It'll be very interesting to see what they do with that. They've got a lot of young talent, that's going to be on this team next year and what they're going to be able to do with it. I'm excited to tell. If you didn't pick up on that, that was called filling because both of my co-hosts just decided to absolutely disappear on me.
I don't know what happened.
Yeah, I don't know either. It got very dark by Justin. I'm assuming it,
we're back.
You know, the apocalypse took him out of the way. No, at the end of the day, I think no matter what we want, it's going to be the massive slow play. This is the Iser plan. I think every single person here would love to say that day one, you know, Valeno, Zadina.
Yep.
I went to say Filip Zadina and I said Filppula. Filip Zadina, Joe Valeno, Moritz Seider, Lucas Raymond, all these guys are sitting on the ice ready to go day one. Justin's 6'9" goalie they just drafted is ready to be between the pipes, but that's not going to happen. Those guys are going to be a while out. So it'll be curious to see. Like I said, Justin said no more Danny DeKaiser, so he automatically wins. My rules, this is how we do this. Switching over now to Russ. Russ, here you go.
I had to steal one.
Yeah, you got one. Ooh, okay. This is going to be very interesting. Russ, your choice on, not your choice on topic, your choice on which side you want to take. College football, with the announcement that Oklahoma and Texas are trying to make their way into the SEC, they're trying to move on to a different conference. College football needs to accept its time to restructure and build two, quote unquote, let's call them super conferences. You get in by ranking, you, and at the end of the year, both conference presents eight teams for a basically college football version of March Madness. It's time for this. There's no more of this, you know, subjectively putting different teams in. Let's see Alabama, Clemson, LSU, Notre Dame, Michigan, Ohio State, Texas, Oklahoma. Let's see them all play each other every year, and let's see what team really comes out on top. Not the teams that have three tough games a year and then six or seven, you know, easy games where they put up 50 points on a team that should be playing JCC schools.
So I'm going to take the pro on this. Okay. I'd like to see how, what their plan is for enforcing strength of schedule. That's my one caveat there. That has to be figured out in some way, because you have a massive division. You have to find some way to make competition equitable, in some regard. But we get rid of the automatic conference bids by getting rid of the automatic conferences, right? We don't get to have the whole UFC going 13-0 because they played FAU, right? And nobody else, and claiming we're the national champions. Well, no, actually, you need to play the big shots now, and you can, which will more than likely redistribute a lot of the wealth that comes with the SEC stuff. Texas had their own broadcast channel. Now that money's getting shuffled around. It's getting shuffled around to smaller schools as well. My one caveat that I want to add to it, introduce relegation too. You want to do your Power Five as one division or two divisions? Bring in the lower schools. So you have UCF that's perennially good. Cool. Bump them up. Take Rutgers. Send them off onto Rikers Island for all I care. Push them down there. And now you have weight to it. Yes, I'm stealing something from the other football in doing relegation. But come on. That's how you put stakes back into it. So yeah, no, I'm for it. Bring it all in. Make the playoff actually, you know, the best teams and not just the best teams from each conference that are held completely separate.
Well, I think it also adds in the Boise State argument where for
exactly,
4 years,
yes,
where Kellen Moore lost two games in his entire college football career, mm-hmm, and he never played in a national championship once, even though his teams were unstoppable. In theory, they were unstoppable. Right. It's the same as, like you said, UCF. Jay, the con of that, where do you sit on no more Big Ten, no more Big 12, no more Pac-12, ACC, SEC. Give me two super conferences. Every year they'll seed you out if you're in the top 30 teams in the of the you know 30 teams in the country. You make one of these super conferences, and at the end we got 16 teams ready to go.
See, I'm against it because you're not fixing the actual problem in football. Relegation, off the record. Excellent. I love that. Back on the record. That doesn't fix your problem. Your problem as to why you actually need super leagues to begin with is because you have a disproportionate amount of five-star recruits going to the same four schools every single year. And that is your actual problem. You can't figure out a playoff system or super leagues or whatever you want to do, because you only have certain amount of talent going to certain schools, which then creates Bama versus Clemson every single year and Ohio State knocking on the door and Notre Dame being cute or Oklahoma being cute or Georgia being cute. You need to relegate your players in a way to move the talent around to make that equal so you don't have a Kellen Moore again. You've got actual good quarterbacks going to maybe less than better schools. And then once you even out the playing field of talent, then keep the leagues as they are. Keep your automatic bids. Keep your conferences. Keep the Big Ten. Keep the Pac-12. Keep everything the way it is. Fix your talent of players so not every five-star is going to Bama every year. And then move forward that way. I think just creating the super leagues is just going to glorify what is already in place, which is too much talent going to the same damn school.
So So let me counter that with the talent displacement thing. Right now, if you're in the South, right, and you're an SEC football nation, you see the same 10, 12 teams every single year. Whatever team you're closest to and you're watching, you're always seeing those teams. So, of course, if you're on one side of the Bama LSU, you're always going to be, and every year is going to dig you deeper into that trench. But if one year you see Bama USC, and then you see Bama Texas, and then maybe you see Bama Wisconsin, now you've been exposed to new things. You've been exposed to new options, which would open the door to players actually envisioning themselves going to different schools and going to different areas instead of just reinforcing the same things that they see over and over and over. But also, how many schools are in the Big Ten? It's a hell of a lot more than 10. Why are we trying to keep that alive?
Well, all right, counterpoint.
Go ahead.
Counterpoint.
counter, and then the judge gets to weigh in. My counter would be, we're going to have my favorite term in my household is the word fucky. It's a word that we kind of use when things just doesn't sit right. It's kind of fucky, F-U-C-K-Y. What's going to be fucky about this season is the NIL. NIL is hand in hand with Bama, Clemson, Ohio, Notre Dame. You're going to want the NIL to match the school and the logo on the front. You're going to that school because you want to get paid more money in the NFL, and you're going to get that money going into college. So I think being exposed to Texas on a more routinely patterned schedule might help, but you're still going to go big. All right, well, I got 20 million followers on TikTok. Let me go wiggle around in the Alabama jersey and make some money. You're going to elevate that brand for your NIL. So I still think now it's convoluted for any kid to go anywhere.
The NILs.
I know you can't wear like the school landscape jersey, a lot, though. Like, yeah.
Yeah. But if you're wearing crimson, then everybody knows.
Yeah. Well, see, but that's why I think two conferences like I'm proposing kind of does tilt that scale a little bit, because if you put Clemson and LSU, Alabama and Ohio State, Texas and Oklahoma, you know, all these like these top tier schools into a, you know, a division where they got to see each other one, maybe two times a year. There's no way that some of these schools have a remote chance of coming out on top. Now, yes, in theory, we could get Alabama, Clemson, but at the same time, you could get other things. You could get USC getting it in for a year. You could get, you know, you could get Notre Dame or Oklahoma having a game and being able to pull it out and give themselves a good position.
It's possible. Yeah, I wonder if that's not easier to pull out if you get an automatic bid from winning your small conference.
Yeah.
But
I will definitely we'll see.
Change the landscape a lot.
Oh, it absolutely would change the landscape a ton. I'd be very curious to see what happens with it. Okay, so I believe we're on to Jay now. I believe it's Justin's turn to try to to handle a topic. I've been deleting them as we go, so we got seven left. And, oh, it happened. It happened perfectly. This was the topic I literally wrote with Justin in mind. Justin, on the pro side, this year we have seen an insane amount of playoffs in the PGA Tour. These things going to 6, 7, 8 guy playoffs. I know you are not a fan of a stacked leaderboard. You want to see spacing. You want to see fun. You're going to get the pro here. The pro of the PGA Tour needs to find a way to make these courses harder by not just making them longer. Actually make them harder.
Gentlemen, have you ever played putt-putt and putt-putt course?
Yeah.
Either.
A time or two.
The suspense is killing me.
Bueller.
It's very.
Uh-oh.
Russ, well, while we wait for Justin with his technical difficulties, why don't you hit me with the con here of why it's not, it's something other than the PGA's responsibility to figure this out?
So I'll argue it from the only perspective that I can, and that is a fan of other sports. We look at hockey, we look at basketball, we look at football, we look at baseball. When is the single most exciting part of the year? It's the playoffs. So yes, you could artificially make the courses more difficult, which will in turn eventually make the game more technically entertaining. However, you will always be looking for the time when two guys are came down to one shot and one of them's going home sad and the other one is winning big, because that is the drama, the soap opera that makes us fall in love with sports. If you're getting that on a weekly basis, it's not a problem you have to fix. That's the entertainment you're trying to bring.
I mean, it is true. And I mean, look, I as an advocate for the game of golf, someone who loves it, someone who's married to someone who does this for a profession, I am not a proponent of it. It doesn't make it harder by making it longer, because then you lose the interest of the fans, because when you're watching golf, you want to see these guys do stuff on a course that you could imagine yourself playing, where you could see, oh, he hit it there. Wow, that's crazy. I can't hit it there. But when you have them standing on a tee box and saying, this is a 700-yard par five, well, that's just stupid. Like, no one's going to ever play that. So you lost me on this. Now it turns into long drive, guys. So I do think the PGA Tour needs to find a way to make this tougher, but they need to do it in ways other than making it a giant driving range. No one needs a giant driving range. We need a way to make this a tougher task, and doing it in a way that doesn't alter this course to an unbelievable thing. All right, Jay. So while you were out, Russ laid down the argument of how he would go about it, but I still want to know, what's your argument for the pro of finding a way to make this tougher by doing things other than lengthening?
All right, so you guys got me loud and clear now?
Yep.
Loud and clear, buddy.
I apologize. I shouldn't use an iPad from like the 1980s to try to do a podcast. Not a good idea. So I will not take the pro of that anytime soon. We need to make these courses more difficult, and I can tell you why. This Sunday, when you watch the Northern Trust, I promise you it's going to be stacked full of names. It's going to be stacked of similar scores, and we will go to a playoff. I take that bet right now that there's a playoff at the Northern Trust in New Jersey. These courses are not up to par with the technology that's coming out. And when you can hit shit really, really, really far, like Bryson, and disrupt the game, oh my God, we gotta change the rules. No, you gotta evolve your course. Your course is set in stone in so many ways that you need to make the greens difficult, like at the Rocket Mortgage. Don't let the score get run up and then get packed, and then you have six person playoffs that don't make any sense. The whole point to make a golfer be outstanding and phenomenal is that he's above and far beyond everybody else. And when everyone's on an equal level, a playing field, you can still be the variable of the course and change the design to make it difficult. I'm going to hate Sunday. I've got money riding on four different golfers, and I'm absolutely going to hate it, because it's going to be Justin Thomas, it's going to be Rahm, it's going to be Cantlay, it's going to be Johnson, and potentially Morikawa if he gets his head out of his ass. It's going to be loaded on Sunday, and I'm going to hate it. And you have to fix it. They have to make it maybe two guys are competing, not six. Playoffs are dumb. Not in hockey, but in golf, it makes no damn sense.
No, that's fair. I completely agree. This just in, it had nothing to do with golf, but we got to break it anyway. Adrian Wojnarowski announced that restricted free agent Hamidou Diallo has signed a two-year, $10.4 million contract to stay here in Detroit. So he will remain a Piston for at least another 2 years. That just reported by Adrian Wojnarowski. So clearly they liked what they got when they got him, so they're going to do what they can and hold on to him, and they see him as a piece in the future. Jay, I agree with you. These courses, they were built a certain way. So lengthening them is just saying, oh, we didn't build them right. So you need to find a way to take what you have and work with it. You got to find a way to make it tougher, whether that's taking said bunker and moving it to a spot where guys are landing, or, you know, like you said, making these greens tougher, making the rough a little bit more challenging. You know, hey, you have a tournament or a PGA Tour event a year in advance. You can have these really cool things called trees planted in certain spots to make it tougher for people. So I think that's the way you got to go about it. I agree that the length makes no difference. And I mentioned this to Russ while we were waiting for you to come back. Length does nothing because you're a golfer, Jay. We watch this sport. We talk about it almost every weekend. When you watch this, you want to watch these guys do this stuff on courses that you can picture yourself playing. Oh, he hit it there. That's great. And I said, when you see these guys standing on a tee box and it says, oh, Rory McIlroy about to tee off on the 17th, a 700-yard par 5, you lose me. I'm never going to play that. It's just, you know, I don't play 700 yards for 3 or 4 holes combined, let alone one hole on its own. So you lost me. And that's why they need to find a way to do this in a way that's not going to lose people.
Yeah, and I don't think I was just thinking in my head, like, what could you do with the weather? Like, I don't think you want to purposely, like, hey, we're playing in a thunderstorm today. Best of luck out there, guys. Like, you got to get creative with fairway width, bunker placement, hazard placement, kick Bryson out. You got to get creative. You got to find good ways to do things.
You've got me. That'll be the day that I become a golf fan, when they start making artificial weather to play in. That'd be cool. You drive off and your ball just explodes because lightning hits it. Hell yeah.
Oh God. Pay no attention to these power lines running over your head. They are here for aesthetics. It'll be curious to see what happens. It'll be very curious. All right, moving on. Just six topics left. And these are good ones. These are good ones. Hey, but hey, there's still a your choice out there. One of you still has a chance. We're over to Russ now. Russ, your topic is, this is the tough one. This is the one that I thought was going to be hard.
This is the tough one?
This is the tough one. Russ, you have to take the opposing side. You cannot be in favor of this.
Okay.
Actually, this might be easier.
I love pizza.
The 500th home run is more of a distraction than it is a benefit to the city of Detroit.
So I have to take the con to that statement?
To that statement. That the 500th home run is nothing but it's more of a distraction than it's doing good for this team right now.
Oh, for the team.
There are exactly two reasons that anyone in the nation has paid attention to the Detroit Tigers baseball in the last month, and it's been Jack Morris's dumb ass and Miguel Cabrera chasing 500. It's not a distraction when it's filling the ballpark, and hey, COVID reasons that made me squirm aside, that's more money, that's more seats filled than they've had 5, 6, 7, a decade, right? Like, so in such a long time, it has reinvigorated and convinced the young players on the Tigers that if this is good, they are going to play in an electric stadium. It is not a distraction. It's the main event. This is the point. If you don't care about milestones being met in a sport, why are we even watching it? What's even the point if not to be entertained and excited by history? Get out of here.
Okay, it's fair. It's fair, Jay.
Well, as an aside, on a personal level, it's not only distracting just for the team, but it's distracting for my wallet, because I have bet on Miguel Cabrera
to hit
500 about 4 nights in a row now. I'm getting +600, +700, +300 odds. I'm watching every game, which helps Russ's argument. I'm losing my money. And every at-bat, everyone stands up, and we're all getting excited, and the fans are getting excited. Then they're booing the opposing pitcher for walking him or throwing him, you know, low and out because that's not his zone. Like, it's not good for the team because that's all that we're doing now. We gave up 9 runs in 3 innings today, probably because Miggy batted twice. It's probably not why, but it legitimately happened against the Angels today. They gave up 9 runs over 3 innings when we had a 10-0 lead. It's a distraction from the team effort, I'd say. Miggy shows up. He's swinging for the fences. How about he just lays one down real quick? A little bloop out to left field just to get on base. Mm-mm. He's aiming for – he was 6 feet away from putting one in opposite field last night. And we could be over this, and I would have made some money. But still, we're talking about it again today. So it is a distraction.
Sir, the first run driven in the Tigers' last game was Miguel Cabrera – blooping a little shot into the outfield for a single.
I want him to bloop all over the place every day. One bloop is not good enough. That is low on my bloop standards. from a guy of his stature and his age.
We gotta have a bloop index though. Fantastic.
So my opposing argument to this, Russ, is like you said, it's filling the seats and it's doing all that. And it is a milestone and it's something we need to keep an eye on. But my argument would be that, and you might be a different animal here, but I'm going to ask for the basic everyday Detroit sports fan. What do you think you've heard more of in the last 3 weeks? What Miguel Cabrera did at bat last night, or what Spencer Torkelson, our first overall pick, did in the minors in the last? See, you're doing that because you know the answer to this question. But I'm saying, if Miggy's not chasing 500, Torkelson's 7 of 7 in two nights becomes a huge story. Or the fact that him and Riley Green both got moved up to the level right below Major League Baseball. The guy was drafted a year ago and he's already like knocking on the door of being a Detroit Tiger. That's my only reason for why I think it's more of a distraction, is because Mickey is the Detroit Tigers. He's been the Detroit Tigers for almost 20 years. Torkelson's the future. And at some point we need to start paying attention to the future more than we do to a guy that's batted, I think, what, 3 of 15 in the last couple days. It's just that thing. It's that thing of why that's the only reason I would argue it as a distraction in the negative over just a general distraction to help us forget that the Tigers are a below 500 team on their best day. But I do want to ask you both before we move on to the next topic, where do you fall on? I heard this from a caller the other night on 97.1 that called in and said, all right, seriously, if you're this the GM or the manager for the opposing team that Tigers are playing, you look at your pitcher and go, okay, when Miggy steps up, 2 balls, and then just throw him the most lobbed pitch you can and let him get this over with. Just get it out of the way and kill the distraction by letting him just get the homer. Where do you fall on this? You hate it. Okay.
Hate it. I absolutely hate it. No, we've come 499 legitimate. Don't cheapen it by copping out with this last one. Pitch him right. Right. Don't be afraid to throw the 500th home run to him, but pitch him in the way that gives your team the best chance to win. And that's how you keep baseball legitimate.
See, I'm glad we're on opposite ends of this, because how did they pitch him at 399? Probably different than they're pitching him, but probably differently how they're pitching him at 499. So I like Shohei Ohtani. He should have. It's almost like a passing of the torch. He would have been the best person to lob it to him. And I understand his stats and what he's – yeah. I understand his stats and what he's accomplishing this year is like against that. He hit his 40th home run against us last night. Like, if I was Shohei, I wanted to be like, oop, there you go. And then like, oh, Miggy gets 500 off of Shohei. Shohei needs revenge. He's going to use this against him for this whole rest of his career. Like, bulletin board that, man. I would love if someone gave him a cupcake right now.
Are you a big WWE fan or the biggest WWE fan?
I loved wrestling as a kid.
That because that's what you have put out a Vince McMahon playbook right there.
It's true. No, look, and that's exactly the caller said. It's Ohtani. Let him throw him a meatball. Let him just knock it out of the park. Get it over with, and we're on. And while I want to see the 500th. I want it to happen.
Yeah.
We're all there. I don't want that. I don't want Ohtani to throw him 2 balls in the dirt and then go, all right, here you go. Ooh, curve right in there for you. Perfect. You can't miss it. I'd rather see Miggy on a, 3-2 pitch, decide he wants to swing for the fences and, have him bounce. Honestly, I think the greatest thing would be all time would be if he bounced one right off the number 6 logo or number 6 out on the wall. And just said, suck it, K-Line. Just for that reason. Just let him do it in a Miggy kind of way, not a let's get this out of the way kind of way.
Well, real quickly, because I watched more Tigers baseball than I have ever had in my life. He has been in opportunities where a man has been on base, where we're talking about tying run home runs, 500 home runs. Like he's had all the theatrics right in front of him. Winning the game, tying the game, bottom of the 9th, bottom of the 8th, extra innings. He had those at-bats. I want it so bad, and I want to make money off of it. I'm sorry. Absolutely. I'm done.
All right, here we go. Moving on. Next topic. This is for Justin. Justin, you get to do the topic. We already did that one. One more time.
Take two.
Just being fair. Okay. Well, we talked about it a little earlier in a way, and now we're going to walk right over to it. College football athletes being able to take sponsorships, being able to, you know, we're finally seeing the let them get paid for playing kind of thing. But are we seeing it in the right way of letting these guys? I heard the story the other day that one of the new quarterbacks for Ohio State was gifted a car. Like that to me a year ago, that's called improper benefits. You don't get to play college football anymore. Now it's here, take this beautiful new Mercedes. So did we kind of skip the step of let's do this in the normal way of we'll give you a little bit of compensation, we'll see where it goes, to all of a sudden going, hey, you like the big story. A kid from Catholic Central just won the U.S. amateur for golf, went to Michigan State, won the U.S. amateur. One of the first calls he got was from Titleist asking if he wanted to start playing Titleist clubs. Those are $5,000 clubs when you put the whole bag together, and he's going to get him faux fouille. So it's that thing of, have we kind of skipped a step here, Jay? You are on the con. You're disagreeing with this, that this is the right way to go about it.
This lines up with how I personally feel. This is the exact right way to go about it. I mean, if you have an ability to do something and someone is willing to legally and correctly give you something for it, you're you are valuable to someone else because of what you can do. There's nothing wrong with that at all. So whether you're a college athlete and you get persuaded, I guess, to maybe go to a college university because of your name and likeness, or you're at that university and now you're making money because of your name and likeness, I got no problem with that. Ever since we started this pod, it's always been pay that man his money, or her money. You pay them their money. It's what you're worth to someone. If someone wants to give me Titleist because they think I'm the next best thing, throw it in my truck. I'm going golfing with Titleist clubs. I got no problem with that. It allows for a free market in a way. Universities are already making money hand over fist as it is. Might as well put the students in the same spot where they can get what they can.
All right, Russ, explain to me how college football and college sports in general skipped a step.
Oh, you know, it's about damn time you have a hard topic. All right, don't take that breath with me.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I think I got something formed here. A big enabling force in paying college athletes is that gambling is legalized. Mm-hmm. This legalizes and legitimizes the avenues in which college players can get money for their craft. Before that, we've had multiple instances, right, of fixing games or questions of games being fixed in ways because players are getting paid under the table illegitimately. Now that it's been legitimized and there are avenues for it and the punishments for breaking them are even more severe, you are less likely to see that. However, it has not been legalized in all states yet. So now you have situations where the pressure could be even greater on these college athletes to take improper benefits to throw a game because they can't get it through their normal means. The people who would be giving the money can't spend their money in the legitimate ways. And that's going to force those kids into unfair circumstances. So the step that was skipped was waiting for all states to legalize it so that we can protect them blanket across everything. It's good, but maybe it's too fast.
Shit.
I didn't believe any of that.
You guys, he's good. He's good. Like this is what happens when you study. He's good. I can't say the word commodity.
Commodity, that's the word.
That's the word.
In the back of my mind, I'm forming mine and I'm going, what was that word he was trying to do?
Commodity.
Oh, that was very good. I liked that one. Look, see, I'm in that weird realm where I've always said, and we've always said on the show, I think these guys should get paid for what they do in some way. I don't know what, but I think that they should get paid for something in some way. That being said, Maseratis and freaking, you know, these sponsorships to things that you should, that are, that those are pro athlete kind of things. To me, I saw it as a skipped step. I always said that I, you know, Russ and I have had long debates, some Bible length text messages about how I view college football and college sport. I'm saying college football, but I mean college sports. I view it as your step to an internship. You're interning for the job you're going to get in a couple of years. I view it as that, but I and like Russ has always said, there are paid internships. And I while I agree with that, I'd look at you and say, I'm willing to bet the intern doesn't make as much as you do, Russ, even though you're going to have the same degree. I know Ford University is an equal opportunity employer, but I'm saying the intern doesn't make as much, even though they're going to have the same job as you one day, they're not there yet. That would be my only reason to say that they skipped a step in doing this. But to me, it's not such a monumental step that it's like, okay, reset, start over, got to do this a different way. It's just a thing of it's going to be an adjustment period after 40 years of having the conversation of they need to pay these guys. Well, they're finally paying them. It just was a lot quick is how I see it.
Drinking from the fire hose.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, Jay, over to you, buddy. I hope you're ready for this, man. No. Actually, no, I'm sorry. It's Russ's turn. I was very incorrect about that. This is Russ's turn. And guess what it is, Russ?
Your hot dog is a sandwich.
Don't tempt me.
Your choice, Russ.
Yeah, we're going back to the internet circa 2018, apparently. So I got a small heads up that this was going to be happening. And by small, I mean about 10 seconds before Justin joined the call earlier. So not a lot of time to prepare, just enough time to consider, should I go Jack Fox is going to be a Pro Bowler this year? Should that be my topic? But I went against it because I want an actual interesting, uplifting one. So I'm going to take the pro because I'm excited about it. And it's that the Red Wings will have a 30-goal scorer for the first time in many, many years this season.
By the way, can I just say how hockey-starved you two are?
I'm so starved, dude.
I give you guys a choice to pick any topic you want, and you both go Red Wings.
Correct.
It's hockey-starved over here. I'm going to get out of the way real quick. Russ, I know you said pro. I'm with you. Pro, all day. I think one of these guys breaks through this year, whether it's Dylan, Zadina, Verana, someone. I think one of them breaks through.
Well, I'll start to make my points here, and then we'll see if Justin can be a Mr. Poopy Pants once again. So my case for the Red Wings having a 30-goal scorer is not hinged on Dylan Larkin and Philip Zadina having average shooting percentages for a change. They're both due for a bounce back. They're both well below average in their shooting percentage. So either one of them could be a dark horse candidate on its own. But my hopes are pinned on one Jacob Ferrana, who for the first time in his entire career will have the man, capital T, capital G, or I guess the guy then, duties on a team. He's been relegated to third line usage. And what has he responded with? Over the last three seasons, he is in the top five for even strength goal scoring rate. That's goals per 60. He's with the likes of Austin Matthews, Alex Ovechkin, David Pastrnak, and Brendan Gallagher. That's what he's at. He's never been to 30 goals yet, but that's a 0.37 goals per game rate, and he's been at 0.38, 0.36, and 0.29 the last 3 years. He's right there, and the difference is going to be time on ice, something that he'll get plenty of in Detroit finally. Give me 30 goals, baby.
The gentleman from Michigan would like to rescind his time to his opponent. No questions.
No questions.
Hey, it's fair. Jay, is there enough talent on this team, though, for a 30-goal scorer to break through?
There is, but the problem why it won't happen is the result as to why it actually hasn't happened yet, and that's Jeff Bleschel. You got the wrong system. Guy. You got the wrong guy running. Yeah, you got the wrong guy back there, man. He's kind of, we talk about placeholder. We talk about he gets extended for a little bit. he's not the co- he's not like Joe Quenneville was able to take Chicago and take Taves and Kane and mix up and Corey Crawford and shove it in our face with Duncan Keith and make it work. And they scored a bunch of goals and they had a great run at it. I don't see Blashill doing that for us. I don't see him being the maestro behind the band to make it work yet. I think the talent's there. I think if you're picking the right players, Blashill's got to go eventually. He's not lifting a cup with this team in any capacity.
Okay.
That's fair. Bylsma leaves because he's got no upward growth on the team either. So he goes somewhere else. Blash has got to go, then we'll get a 30 goal scorer.
You know where Bylsma ended up?
Where?
An assistant in the AHL.
Yeah, that's not upward mobility at all.
it's downward fast.
Oh, this isn't good. You should have yielded your time. all right, here we go. Over to Jay. Jay, three topics left, and I'm actually genuinely excited because I don't think there's a wrong topic to land on Justin right now. This could be great no matter what happens. Oh, it happened. Okay, Jay, you're on the pro side of this. Okay, so you're in favor of this. Don Muehlbach being cut by the Detroit Lions is a sign that the old regime is now 1,000% over, not a single piece left standing from the previous. Don Muehlbach is a sign that the Lions are officially turning the corner and there is no more looking back.
You guys probably didn't see this on Twitter or social media anywhere. You had to be like the elite of the elite in Allen Park to watch this actually transpire. But what you missed out on was Don Muehlbach riding out on the ATV they custom built for Patricia. I know, it's hard to believe, but it actually happened. Muehlbach was gifted that ATV. They said, leave, take Sheila with you. We got to go. Please just press gas and leave. It's nice to see that this hurts. He had a great career with us. It's nice to see that we're moving past our what we've done and we're looking forward. And this is all different, man. We're talking cappuccinos and kneecaps now, not ATVs and whatever we did in the past. We're over it. We're going forward.
Okay, Russ, I know it's gonna be tough for you. You're a Donnie boy.
Donnie boy. Yeah. Oh, Donnie boy. I'll spare you that. So I have to take the con. Oof.
You got to tell us that it's still happening. Hey,
you got to basically sell us that this was vindictive. And not.
I know how to do it, too.
Yeah. Forgive me, Mule, for I am about to commit a sin. Don Muehlbach is a long snapper. We're talking about a long snapper. Justin wants to rag on Jack Fox, future Pro Bowler Jack Fox, for being a punter. And Don Muehlbach is just the guy that throws the football to him. He is the pinball shooter that sends the ball into play. He is the thing that happens before all the good stuff does. He is nothing but a figurehead and can't be a sign of anything one way or the other. This was father time coming from Dan Campbell. Played with Don Muehlbach on the Lions. It's not a sign of things changing when a 90-year-old dies. The 90-year-old died because they lived a long and happy life. That just happens. And to read anything further into it, you're staring at clouds and making zoo animals. It's not actual analysis and nothing you can really pull from this. Is it still going on? I don't know. Is Jamie Collins still counted on to perform in a defensive scheme that he's never performed well in, never performed well in anything but the New England Patriots scheme? I don't know. I guess maybe there are some things hanging around still.
Look, I read it as, it hurt. I read it as the Lions just cut a guy who had a better completion rating for points than Matt Stafford. So you got to look at it from that aspect. Look, it's that same thing. Yes. In the scheme of things, it's not like we just cut our all pro wide receiver or our, you know, soon to be Hall of Famer defensive end. We cut our long snapper. The Mule was here for a very long time. He had a great career here. I agree with that. The guy, but you got to remember, the guy snapped to Jason Hansen for a long time. That should tell you it's been a while. Love the guy. Really, really wish that, you know, we could have had one more year of him just to keep the streak alive. But like all other streaks here in Detroit, they're going to end eventually, and we're not going to like them when they end. So, yeah, it's upsetting to see him go, but I do believe this is a sign of, look, we got to make room for the people we really think need to be here, and the only thing that really seems harsh about it was that it was on his birthday. Like, seriously. That's just tough. That's just tough. You couldn't wait until, like, maybe a couple of days afterwards once the cake had settled. I don't know. We'll see. Moving on over to Russ. Final two topics, Russ. Two very, very good ones. Okay, here we go. You are the pro here, Russ. You are for this. The fact that NHL jerseys are now going to look like NASCARs with sponsors all over them.
All right. To be clear, it isn't sponsors all over them necessarily. It's just ad patches have been approved, just like we just saw in the NBA, right? So maybe it just ends up being, hey, a little thing here. If you remember, we got helmet ads last year here. And that, for all the uproar that was, that kind of died away pretty quick. Now, granted, half of that uproar was people going, well, what's next? Next, they'll have ads on the jerseys. And oops, I guess you're right. You want to rectify that? Go to games. Make the sport entertaining enough. And what this is doing then, and why this is a good thing ultimately, is it will give the NHL more resources, which they then have to use to make the sport more entertaining. Phoenix got kicked out of their lease, or Arizona rather, got kicked out of their lease today. Auston Matthews, I would venture to say, is probably not in the NHL if he doesn't grow up in Arizona with a team there to see. He's too good of an athlete. He would have moved on to something else. If you want to grow the sport in unconventional areas, you have to dump resources. As we've seen, that takes money. Atlanta, money, not there, gone. Arizona, money, not there, maybe gone very shortly here. We might miss the next Auston Matthews because there wasn't enough money to put into Arizona. That's a damn shame, and that's going to hold the game back. Ads, they help keep that money in there. They help keep the resources in there to do the important things. Now Gary Bettman's got to help do all the rest of it. And iffy on that. But the ads will be annoying for a couple days, and then you'll forget about them, just like you forgot about the ads on the boards that are superimposed in the broadcasts.
I'd like to state the obvious that if you've listened to this podcast, you know that Russ just completely ruined my train of thought by bringing up the Atlanta Thrashers. Yeah. That is the gaping hole that is so deep in my body, you can't fix it. I love the Thrashers. Here's my problem. And I think maybe NHL fans aren't going to complain as loud enough as another sports fans will eventually. Ads on what is the most sacred part of a brand, which is the jersey in the NHL, it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt the original six. I don't care what you put there. Dan Gilbert's face, Quicken, Ford, put whatever you want right there. It's probably going to be some like gambling shit. I love gambling. I don't want it on an original six jersey. Just as much as you tell me you're going to take an ad eventually and put it on a pinstriped jersey that doesn't even get a last name on it. Wait until they get pissed and they got to hear about it. I get capitalizing on corporate America and getting that dollar bill. Love it. I get it. But on the jersey, that is the, like, you can't walk in. You might as well go into the locker room and take a logo that stands in the middle that you can't even put your feet on. Just put McDonald's right over it. Tell me how that goes well in the room. I think it's going to be weird as hell, and I'm totally against it. It's going to throw it off. I don't want to see, put Jumpman right next to the wing wheel. Stop it. This ain't Jordan. This is Detroit. This is Hockey Town. I'm going to come up with my own corporation that's literally just the Red Wings logo again, and I'll pay them just to put the Red Wings logo again on the chest because that'll be better than McDonald's or Air Jordan. Pinstripes. Put that on pinstripes and tell me how that goes. I'm sorry. You got me pissed.
This is what we want, though. I like the conversation. Look, as long as it's minimal, I'm okay with it. Like Russ said, you kind of forgot about all the ads that were on the boards after a while. You got used to it and it just went away. But I just, like, I am very fearful that we're gonna see these guys skate out, and their helmets are gonna be red, but they're also gonna have Bell Tire right here and Big Boy on the back, and you know, right next to Zadina's name is gonna be, you know, this giant Ford patch. So it's like, I just don't really like, we can find other ways to do this. Leave the jerseys alone. That's how I really feel about it. But I also don't expect this to turn into that thing where, yeah, you're going to see, 90 patches on these jerseys for every little business in the city. It's that opening to the door. And I just hope that the door doesn't open much further. Let's just leave it as minimal as possible. All right. Last topic. And then we're going to get to bet of the week real quick. But last topic, I'm going to give Jay a courtesy here. Jay, you get to pick. Do you want to be the pro or the con? But you have to pick blind.
I want to yell some more, so I'm going to be the con.
Shocker. Salty's back.
I don't think you're going to yell on that.
No,
all right.
No, Salty's not back.
All right, so you're going to be opposed to this statement. Okay, you're going to go against it. Cade Cunningham was not the right pick at number one.
Look at Russ's face. So you're telling me that Cade Cunningham was not the right? Are you dumb?
There we go.
Are you dumb? It was the correct pick. Jalen Green doesn't know how to act like a grown-ass individual. By throwing shade at Detroit already. Oh, I wasn't going to play in that city. Shut up. You're an athlete. You've got skills. Cade, yeah, Russ already knows he lost this. Cade coming to Detroit was the right move. It's why they didn't come off of it. It's why we didn't entertain Houston or Cleveland or anyone with their Fantasyland projections. Motorcade, baby. It was the right pick. Jalen Green will be doing something other than playing basketball in a little bit here. Go have fun in Chicago. That's the Chicago mentality. We'll bring back the Chicago-Detroit Pistons rivalry, buddy. You idiot. Cade's right.
Oh, Russ.
I'm so mad at you.
Yeah, I know.
I'm so mad at you. Oh, my God.
Well, let me just to be fair, you would have gotten this no matter what.
Okay.
On the spin, it was Khan. So he would have had to make the same argument regardless. So you would have had to make this argument no matter what.
I'm gonna watch this. This is great. I got front row seats for this show. Okay.
I hate this so much.
If you're just tuning in now, Russ has to make the argument. If you're just tuning in now, Russ has to make the argument that Cade Cunningham was not the right pick at number one to the Detroit Pistons. And let's listen.
Okay, so let's start it off this way. Under the premise that Cade Cunningham was not the right pick, mm-hmm. Jalen Green wasn't either.
Fair.
And partially because F you, Jalen Green, for everything you're doing here. And he's proven that for everything we talked about, Melo possibly disrupting that chemistry, Jalen Green's already showing him to be that person that we were afraid Melo might be. Dude's got such a chip on his shoulder. Like, he didn't just go to a team in a bigger market mm-hmm. where they're going to build an entire team around him. Like, dude, you're in the NBA. What you doing? I'm going to argue in the fact that it would have been better suited either taking Evan Mobley or finding a way to trade down to 3 or 4 to get Evan Mobley or Jalen Suggs and pick up more assets. And the reason is all of the arguments that I made for why Luka Garza could be a regular rotation piece in that he's good at spacing, he's good on the boards, he's good at shooting, something that's desperately needed. You can survive with a single primary ball handler on the floor at a single time. You had Killian Hayes. For all intents and purposes, that was a tremendous draft class last year. So how do you build on it? Well, Cade Cunningham disrupts it. He doesn't build on it. You now have to then form this good thing that you had around a brand new piece. That changes the variables. That makes it so that maybe they aren't working at the same efficiency. Maybe they aren't what you thought you had. You're taking a good thing and you're throwing it away for the chance that you'll have something great. Maybe you'll have something shit. Evan Mobley plugs more into that. He fits next to Isaiah Stewart much more naturally than Cade Cunningham does next to Killian Hayes. And if you can trade down and pick up a couple assets in doing it, now you build out this depth. You can go and take some swings on guys to fill up that backcourt to play along Killian Hayes. There was a more natural fit to be had. Otherwise, it might not have been the best asset management. Because if we're debating the number one overall pick, the number one overall pick is worth more in your mind than it is in reality. God, I hate that.
Russ just sold us sand on the beach.
Yeah, he did. Oh, that
he did a good job, though. That was good. That was good. That was valid. Oh,
that was phenomenal. I'm going to give
look at his face, first, though. Look at his face.
It hurt him.
I'm going to hell.
Yeah, I'm going to give him. Yeah, he had to say some mean things. He had to go against the Don. He had to go against Cade. He had to somehow sell us on Luka Garza day one. He had some work to do today. And for that, Russ takes the first of, I'm sure, many after how well this went, armchair debates. Phenomenal. Well done. Before we get to a bet of the week, I want to ask you guys something. Over the last, well, let's say the last 20 years, two teams in the NFL have been pretty much right next to each other in terms of success. The Detroit Lions and the Cleveland Browns. That's in saying zero success. Cleveland appears to be turning that corner, appears to be making decisions that are going to benefit them. They made it. They got a playoff win last year. They're a team that's in conversation to do well in the playoffs this year. I want to ask you guys both. We know Jared Goff more than likely isn't the guy. He's the guy in waiting until we can find the guy. So, Russ, I know you just had to do some disgusting things you didn't want to do. That's just a Saturday night for you.
But
now I'm going to let you have an argument where you're going to be able to say whatever you want to say. Would you, if you were in that Lions front office, consider parting ways, amongst other things, but at least this, parting ways with one of those four first-round picks to get your hand on Baker Mayfield?
Just one first-round pick?
You got to part with other things. It's not just going to be a first-round pick, but one of those four first-round picks are going to go out the door in the next 2 years, and you're going to get your hands on Baker Mayfield. Now, other things are going to have to go with that, and what that is, I'll let you decide. Mm-hmm. But would you be willing to part with one of those first-round picks, and in return, all you're getting, you're not getting anything else but Baker Mayfield?
So let's look at it this way. If you believe that Baker Mayfield is a legitimate top 10 to top 15 starting quarterback in the NFL, he's worth multiple first round picks, regardless. He doesn't even have to be Patrick Mahomes. He doesn't even have to be top five to be worth multiple first round picks to start the conversation. This league is quarterback driven, is quarterback dependent, and when's the last time that a team won a Super Bowl without a good quarterback? Joe Flacco. And that defense was transcendent. It was fantastic. And it still took a power outage to get that done.
I think you can make the argument Philly was the last one to win it. I don't know if you call Nick Foles a good
with
quarterback.
Nick Foles.
But I see your argument. The main reason I'm asking this, I saw this today. Mm-hmm. Baker Mayfield was, I believe, third in the league last year in games with a QBR of 80 or better. 80 is a phenomenal number. The only two people better than him last year who had more games than him, Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes. Mm-hmm. Baker Mayfield was first in the NFL in completion percentage of passes over 20 yards.
He's throwing numbers at me. I'm so happy. I don't forgive you for earlier, though.
It's fine. But I'm giving you, I'm just showing you. You're talking about a guy that can drive the ball downfield. Yep. You're talking about a guy that can be protects the ball well. Those are two stats right there that show you he protects the ball well. Those are two things we need in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Do they drive you to think that a first-round pick on a guy who was the first overall pick 4 years ago, mm-hmm. is that enough?
I would start the conversation and be completely fine with two first-round picks and a good prospect. That's on the roster. That's fine. I'm willing to pay whatever it takes to get a legitimate top half of the league, top 10 quarterback, because I think that's where the conversation starts if you want to compete. and you're not really getting there unless you have it, unless you absolutely hit it out of the park everywhere else. And that's hard to do. We can think of the examples off our hands because it's rare, not because it is obvious that it can happen.
All right, Jay, you're going to do some gambling here in a minute, but were you gambling with first round picks?
Smooth.
I'm not. The risk on that is not worth the reward. I mean, if it doesn't work out, look how much you stand to lose on that. That's the scary part for me. Now, do I think Kyle Trask is going to be like the next? No, I don't know where that quarterback is coming out of college that we can draft and get and go. I think that is a path where there's less risk. You don't have to give up a bunch to try. You got to be bad to be in a position to get that quarterback or get lucky like Justin Fields is about to do. There's an ability to find a quarterback deep within a draft where you don't have to give up pieces to get it. Baker's cute and all, but he, for all we know, he could be the Osgood for Cleveland, where he has to be surrounded by other players to make him better. I don't know how far Baker is going to go alone by himself and rebuild a team. He's kind of been gifted a team around him over time. I'd rather get it out of the draft than give up pieces. And I just think that's a very conservative approach to the QB. Or, circa 2 years ago, you draft fucking Tua, and we're not doing this right now, and everything is just moseying on the passer. Just saying. We could have, but we're not. I'm still not giving anything up to try to do that now.
Okay, that's fair. One, Jay, I don't know if you heard. There was a press conference the other day. The Chicago Bears are Andy Dalton's team, not Justin Fields. Andy Dalton even said so himself. Look, at the end of the day, I think I'm a little biased because I'm a Baker fan. But at the same time, those numbers don't hurt in swaying my decision. The fact that I see you can go one of two ways. You can take a guy you can make that move for a first round pick that you're going to use on a quarterback anyway, more than likely. And you can take a guy that's taken real snaps in the NFL, has proven he can be effective in the NFL and could play, or you can, like everybody else has to do, you can make that pick, use a first round pick, more than likely probably the higher of the two first round picks, to get yourself a quarterback. And in 3 or 4 years, find out that you wasted that pick on a guy that just can't do it in this league. He's just not there. So for me, I see the gamble as being my laptop doesn't like me. I see the gamble as being less necessary. And if taking Baker makes more sense to me, if you can do it. Now, look, I'm pulling this out of the air. This is not something that's even remotely been hinted at as a possibility. I'm just putting it together from a little topic, but if the deal was there to be made and they could make it happen, I wouldn't be upset with it. I don't think I think it takes a lot more than just a first round pick and a prospect. I know Russ, you said two first round picks. I think it takes quite a bit to make this deal happen. But yeah, if a guy like Baker was available for that price tag, I think you can't go wrong trying to make it happen. That's where I fall with it.
Plus, just a yes or no. Are the Lions better if you swap Jared Goff for Baker Mayfield? Are they better?
Yes.
Then the first round pick you're trading away immediately loses value as soon as you get rid of it. So you're giving away less.
Yeah. I get it. Well, I think no matter what, Baker, I don't think it's a stretch to say Baker's a better athlete.
Yeah, no, Baker, I agree with you.
Baker, no, I know. I'm not saying you don't. I'm just saying Baker's a better athlete. Now, yes, Jared Goff has been to a Super Bowl. He went to a Super Bowl with one of the best defenses of the last, 20 years. He went to a Super Bowl where they put up 3 freaking points. So I'm not running around about his offensive prowess. It's that thing of, I do believe Baker is the more talented of the two, and I think no matter what you feel either way about these guys, day one, Baker gives you a better chance to win. Yep. No matter where you are on the field, no matter what down it is or what part of the game it is, Baker just gives you that better chance every time he steps on the field. I don't think that's not a stretch to say. Okay, well, he's losing a lot of money. We need to find a bet that'll help him out. It's time for Sergeant Salty's Bet of the Week.
All right. Truth be told, we're not doing preseason again. I'm coming off this Mickey betting. Baseball is a fickle sport to bet on to begin with. I think you have an overlocked or an underlocked, and then bam, there's 11 runs in the ninth. It's very difficult, I'm learning. So we're going to steer away from all that, and we're going to kind of look towards what we're about to be talking about a boatload on this show again, and that's college football. Without looking at schedules, and maybe you have, I know where our teams play each other, but we're going to look at winning totals for three teams in the Big Ten today. Two of which are going to be tough, and one should be easy because they just run the shit anyways. So we'll get the two out the way. Gentlemen, let's start with my Spartans first because maybe they get more wins this year than your team. Who knows? I'm just throwing that out there first of all. Michigan State, the line is set at 4.5 wins on the season. Very easy bet. It's over under at 4.5, and the odds are over 4.5 wins, -162. Under 4.5 wins, +125. So no crazy spread on that. I'm not too concerned with it. I think the number is appropriate. I pray to God we win more than 4.5 wins, or we get more than 4.5 wins this year with Tucker. I want to see him lighting up a cigar every single Saturday night on his porch. So I need to know what you guys are doing with my Spartans this year.
I'm going to quote my favorite animated crustacean, Sebastian from The Little Mermaid, and I'm going to go with under the sea. You guys are under all day. This is not the Mel Tucker tour. You guys are still a year or two away from this being anything resembling a winning record.
You just ruined Little Mermaid for me.
No problem.
So I had to double check that we're back to a full schedule right now, because it's been like 17 years, it feels, since we've had an entire college football schedule to deal with here. So 4.5 wins against 12 games. The implied odds, by the way, say 61.8% implied odds that they'll go over that. And I like it. It's the key factor we're forgetting here is out of conference games are back. And even if Michigan State can't hang in the Big Ten, they're still a legitimate football school. They're going to be better than last year. Marginally better? Maybe. But they also get to play Citadel or whoever else. And that's going to add on a couple wins. So do they win two or three games in the Big Ten? Sure. They can get to five. No problem. I'll take the over.
Okay.
I love it. By the way, Eric, to counter your Sebastian thing, Spartans, we've got gadgets and gizmos aplenty. We're ready to rock and roll here, buddy.
Who cares? No big deal. I want more.
Okay, I love what you're doing. Thanks for picking up on that song with me. Let's put some Disney musicals aside. Here goes Russ.
We finally pushed Russ over the edge. He had to leave.
Yeah, it wasn't making me talk bad about Cade. It was this.
You might have to endure Little Mermaid like 20 times over. So just get ready, okay? Let's bring Russ back in. Let's give him something familiar. Give him a coping mechanism. Let's bring in Harbaugh.
Coping mechanism.
His wondrous career. U of M. The line drawn, 7.5. And Russ, it's simple. The over, the under, whether either way you go on this bet, it's -113 either way. They think they're dead to rights on this number at 7.5. And I got to know, gizmos and gadgets aside, is Harbaugh going to have an 8-win season this year?
Oh, so you've forboden us from looking at the schedule, which would really help me answer this question.
So what's
naturally?
You guys play Ohio State and Michigan State at the end of your schedule this year, which I thought was kind of cute that you end the year against your two rivals. So,
oh, well, they'll win one of those, so that's good at least. 7.5. You know what? It's interesting that MSU has better odds of going over 4.5. But so 7.5, 53.1% implied odds either way. Interesting that that's over 100%. That actually would lean to some certainty there that they know what they're doing, which is weird.
Yeah.
I'm going to take the over. not for anything other than the fact that it's even money either way. So I might as well go with the optimism. You could say that there's the smart bet that, hey, take the under because you'll be happy if they go over and you'll be happy if you win money. And that's mitigating losses. But I'm a Lions fan, so I'm in for pain anyways. I might as well go in for what might make me more money and happy. Play for the home run, like Miggy should.
See, I'll bet it again. That was ballsy. That was ballsy. Eric, back to our musical en route. We'll have to work another Disney theme on this bet. The circle of life is happening for U of M. Are you going under or over?
Ross, here you go. Western, Washington, Northern Illinois, Rutgers, Wisconsin, Nebraska, Northwestern, State, Indiana, Penn State, Maryland, Ohio State.
Yeah, that line's good.
All I could
I'll take the over though.
You're gonna take the over?
Yeah, I'll still stay with the over.
Well, staying with Russ, our theme that Jay wants so bad, you got a friend in me. I'm taking the over. I'm with you on that. I see that line is beautiful. It really is beautiful. But I could see eight. I could see them sneaking one in there. Not the easiest start to a season. I mean, Washington week two can be tough. But look, if you can bookend that with two wins, start off the season 2-1, there's no reason you can't get through Rutgers, can't get through Nebraska, can't get through Michigan State, can't get through Indiana and Maryland. They're going to have to squeak out a tight one with a top team, but there's no reason eight wins can't be. I love that line, and I would probably sit right on it if I could, but I'll take the over.
See, what you're forgetting is Mufasa's in the sky right now going, remember, you have Harbaugh. And that's your problem. I'm taking Michigan on the under. I'm taking State on the over. So we're not lined up anywhere. But where we might be lined up is with.
I have to jump in with my own one because Mufasa in the sky. We just look up and go, "What is that?" And he goes, "Everything the sun touches is your hopes." And what's that shadowy area? The playoff. We don't go there.
That's beyond our abilities.
We've never seen Lucas Oil Field. We have, sorry. I do like your Badlands joke, though. I like that a lot.
Thank you.
Let's talk about Badlands, the team that always goes there. I think this line is very cute, and I would actually probably take the less than favorable odds here. OSU's win total is at 11. You have a little bit of a safety net. If you land at 11, you get a push.
All right, OSU. Ready? Minnesota.
Yeah. Go ready? Ahead.
Minnesota, Oregon, Tulsa, Akron, Rutgers, Maryland, Indiana, Penn State, Nebraska, Purdue, Michigan State, Michigan. I see two losses in there. I'm not going to lie.
I'll take the over.
Who? I personally think they could lose to Oregon. I do. I could see them losing to Oregon. And like it happens every year, I could see them slipping somewhere in the Penn State, Nebraska, Purdue region. I'm not saying we're going to beat them, and I'm not saying you guys are going to beat them. But every year it seems like one of those teams gives them a run for their money. So if they lose to Oregon and then they have a slip up against, you know, Purdue, there you go.
Eric, you might want to get your phone out because that the under's at plus 100. So you're getting even money on that. Russ, the over minus 125, meaning they had a perfect season and go 12-0. Which I love. So, I love the safety net of 11. So then it's like, hey, we tried, but don't take my money, but don't give me money. I love that feeling. The push is great. Live with the push.
So this is a dumb bet. If anyone's listening, do not bet this. This is a trap. The fact that it's an even number alone, look, you have a razor thin margin for this to be right, and that's where the money is. You even money on the under, and they have to lose two games. Ohio State has to lose two games for you to even sniff this. If they lose one, you might as well have not made the bet. You might as well have put your money in the bank, collect your 2% savings on it. Mm-hmm. And that's probably where they're going to line up. You're probably just going to put money on this to get it back later. This is a push. No, I'll take the over because I'll play the game. But this is an ugly bet to make. This is a trap.
little bit of insight on why I think you will be getting your money back later and they're just holding it, because it beefs up their, they're called 10Q reports when they have to report their quarterly earnings. So you funnel more money into the company, they look like they've got better revenue, they give it back to you next quarter. Everyone wins in the finance world. So that's why they do these stupid ass bets. I hate them. It's just to beef up their revenues and their reporting.
Yeah, you wanna put it all on the table. You make that line 10.5.
Yep. Then we get they're not giving up anything on casino wins on that one. So I won't take the bet. I'm gonna take my bookie's advice and steer clear of it. So thank you, Russ. I appreciate it.
This guy.
All right. Well, that was Sergeant Salty's bet of the week. That's gonna do it for us here on Armchair Sports Talk. Interesting episode. We tried something different and I think it went pretty well. It was a lot of fun. I'll have to start brainstorming topics for the next time we do this. But don't worry, I'll give Russ a couple weeks to calm down because he got quite angry.
Thank you.
All the evil things I made him do. Before I let you guys go, my thanks to Sergeant Salty Justin Marcus. Jay, what are you looking for here in the next day or two when we see the Lions' second preseason game? Going to see a little more of the starters this time around.
Yeah, I'll be watching golf the whole time. I said golf almost. I'm going to watch golf this weekend, but I'm going to watch golf as well. So I'm looking forward to it. I promise next time I'll have technology that just works. That's on me today, boys.
Absolutely. As always, we love having them. And the Statman, Russ Ivanek, I'm sorry I got you so heated up today. But you always make us sound a lot smarter than we really are. My thing for you, did we just see the dumbest thing ever? After four Summer League games, they actually pick all first and all second team for Summer League.
I know, that's so dumb. It's so dumb. I mean, it's okay, right? It's probably not the dumbest thing because, you know, there's some teams that exist that we might not need to drag right now. Hey, actually, Justin can't speak back, so Michigan State exists, so it's not the dumbest thing, right? but it's pretty dumb.
Absolutely it is. And as always, I'm your host, Eric Dorsch. That is one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.